Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel, you sick?
I'm slightly under the weather. Look. Before you say
it,
you hear how bad that sounds?
Yeah. Now I'm actually becoming concerned, Rachel.
Okay. And you should be. I'll probably go to the doctor today. I didn't even have time to fix my hair. I took my bob out. This is how we're rolling today, okay? Listen. I am getting used to skiing. So every time I come back from a ski trip, this is what happens. Because of the altitude, I guess, the cold, the change in the climate. Every time I come back, it's some kind of like nasal drip. It settles in my chest. This time might be a little worse than the times before. But I'm done. Ski season's done. Don't be concerned.
You're sick a lot, man. I'm just gonna be honest with you. You're sick like all the time. Is it the pork?
No. No, I mean, listen, I've been sick a lot this year. I've been sick more this year than I have, I don't even know. Like every other week, it's something, truly. You know, stress
is a real
thing.
You know what we're going to do? It is. It's partly the stress. You know what we're going to do? We're going to bring on, we need to talk health. We do. I'm serious. We're going to bring somebody on here because, you know, it is a point where it's too much and you start to ask yourself, is Rachel's immune system functioning at the level that it should be? I think that's a fair question to ask.
It really isn't. It's a fair question, but like everything has been thrown off for me this year. I've lost at least 10 pounds. Hmm. My eating habits are all over the place. You know, I'm always traveling. I'm, you know, trying new things, which I'm not used to these climates. So it's like a combination of things. I went and had an IV yesterday, you know, little IV people that come to you to try to help. And I hate those. Try to boost my immune system. I'm all out of whack. I know it.
I know. Try, admit it. You just can't stop the feeling inside. You know it. I can see it in your eyes. You want me smooth as a mother. And so
undercover. Is that what you were listening to
the way that
before?
You've been watching me.
We underrate Sierra. We underrate Sierra. Yeah, we do.
I don't think so.
I think people appreciate her
for exactly the talent that she is.
We know. Sierra's early catalog, to me, is not being... I went back. So Cowboy Carter, we're going to talk about it. You know, Cowboy Carter made me ask questions. Am I listening to too much male music? You know, if I look at my title right now, because Cowboy Carter made me feel so amazing. And, you know, if I look at my title right now, look at these records that I'm listening to. Scarface, Push It to the Limit, a track by Paul Enigman. Stop Being Greedy, DMX. Just Blaze, Down For My Niggas, tracked by C Murder, Magic, and Snoop Dogg. Fuck Up Some Commas, Future. How Great.
I mean,
J Electronica, Big Boss Rabbit by the toxic Freddie Gibbs himself. then at the bottom of this, what was I made for? Billie Eilish.
What kind of mood were you in? How are you going to switch it up from Freddie Gibbs to... No, it isn't. It won an Oscar.
That's a beautiful
rightfully
song.
So. Yeah. It is so beautiful. But anytime I hear somebody playing, that's not just a song you just say, huh, I really want to hear Billie Eilish today. Like, you got to be feeling something to play that song. You okay?
No, it's a great song.
Are you okay?
Recently played. I'm good.
Are
Cowboy
you?
Carter,
okay.
DMX,
okay.
The Game. And then you have We Don't Trust You, Future and Metro Boomin. Okay. I just need to listen to more. So I listened to Cowboy Carter, and then I was listening
what
the whole
is mine?
Week, going back listening to the women that I like to listen to. I listened to some Sade, And then I got to Sierra, and I'm like, early on Sierra, people are hating on the fact that Sierra had it. She had it.
Nobody was. No, they were not.
They hated it.
20 years ago, because that's when she popped off, 20 years ago, when she came on the scene, everybody was into Sierra. We wanted to dance like her. We wanted to dress like her. Sierra was, like, had it. Wait, can I read you off my list and just show you how different
read
it
you
is
off what you've been of listening
what I've been
to.
Listening to?
This is what we're going to start doing this. What were we listening to this weekend? Rachel, listen to us right now. Go ahead. Tell us.
Okay. I'm Here, Fantasia from The Color Purple. Like That, Future, Metro Boomin, Kendrick. Cowboy Carter. My Idols Lied to Me. Ayanna Lee. I think that's how you say it. Or Ayanna Lee. 112. Oh, Van. This song. Her voice is insane.
I want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Don't play it. Please. Please don't. Please. I don't want to hear it. I don't. God.
It's so rude.
Hear it? I don't
okay. Anyways.
Hear it.
Anyways. 112. 112. Part 3. Let's Ride. Montel Jordan. Soak the
Montel
Shine.
Jordan?
Let's Ride. Montel Jordan. Soak
Let's
the Shine.
Ride.
Masterpiece.
Tonight. Ain't no doubt it. Your love is about it. And I'm so excited. Girl, I want to ride it. That shit went to number 2. Baby is more than incredible.
It was.
Does her thing. 55146. We're nothing but a G string. 55146. What the fuck I'm talking about, Montel. Her little thick ass. Montel was loving
That's a good one. That's a classic.
Montel was loving her little thick ass. Her little
right.
thick ass.
Adore.
55146. Montel Jordan
Excuse
was
me.
Loving her little thick
Excuse
ass.
Excuse me. I'm glad I took you back. You're going to add that to your playlist. Adore Prince. Somebody to Love Queen. Don't Judge Me. Vultures One. The album.
Wow. Vultures One. Vultures One is good. It's good music made by weirdo niggas, but it's good music. It's good music. Not Ty.
And then I was listening to the artist playlist. Tamia, Fantasia, Garth
music.
Brooks, Adele, Mariah Carey.
That's enough. You've named too many
and
people.
Rake it,
I didn't
and
name
Rake It
people.
Up, Yo Gotti. That's my list. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, man. I didn't realize I had a limit. I'm done.
Because your list, honestly, your list is some bullshit. I'll be
you know, Van, I wouldn't expect you to say anything less, even though you took a detour on one of the songs that was on my list.
That is true.
Rachel,
thank you. I think us talking about what we listened to this weekend is good, but I'm going to put the Thought Warriors on something.
Okay.
I want the Thought Warriors to give us different home remedies and different things to boost Rachel's immune system. Sawasap.
He's still on it.
You need some sawasap? Sawasap tea? You ever drink the sawasap?
No.
You need to I'm gonna
drink go to
that sawasap. Sawasap tea? Aloe vera? My mom used to go get
oh,
the aloe vera
man.
Plant.
Aloe vera. Yes. My
Make
grandmother.
Us eat the aloe vera. I don't even know if that shit works. But my mom had so many different ideas of stuff that worked. Who knows if they really worked? But she had remedies.
My granny used to do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's time to get into the goddamn show.
Right. We're talking about music because we were both listening to Cowboy Carter this weekend.
Yeah. On the other side of this break, Balance.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles. Because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you. And your car, Jiffy Lube, car more. to find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
All right, Cardboard Carter dropped. Rachel, give it to me.
Oh, you want my opinion?
Of course.
That's what
the only
opinion
on this podcast that matters.
Stop. Okay. I know people expect me to come in full hater mode because for some reason, people think I really dislike Beyonce's music, which I'm actually a big fan of her music. It's always the fandom that takes it to another level that I get annoyed by. It's the same thing with Swifties. It just gets out of control, right? They treat these people like they're gods.
What is this preamble? Are you going to get to what you thought about Cardboard Carter, or do we have to do a whole referendum?
Do we need a family meeting? Because this is the second time that you have cut me off when I'm talking. The king of long rants. And all I am is setting up what I'm about to say. Take your own advice, man. I mean, this impatience. You're so impatient on this Monday morning. Anyways, so when I first listened to this album,
Rachel's coughing, guys. Rachel has had a coughing fit right now. You guys, we need help. Just be honest. Leave this in. Rachel just muted because she went on a coughing fit.
No,
Rachel, we need help over here, y'all. Somebody has to help us. Okay, we need Andrew Huberman Lab. We need my man. I follow this black doctor. He's fantastic. I want to shout him out. We need him. We need somebody on the podcast, man. Rachel, God bless my sister, man. What the hell's going on? Rachel over there hacking her lungs up. Rachel, you okay? Go for it, Rachel. You got it. Go ahead.
Okay.
We believe in you.
Mm-hmm. So I listen to Cowboy Carter. Wake up Saturday morning, listen to it. I'm going on a hike with Bi-Tracial. And I get to like the first 11 songs. And I was listening to it to just like the song, I guess, from a commercial standpoint. And immediately off the top, I like the first song. I like Bodyguard and I like Spaghetti, or what I think that's what it's called. That's as far as I get to. But I'm kind of like, it's okay. Like, I'm not feeling it because in my mind, I'm thinking this is a little all over the place. It felt chaotic. Similar to how I felt about Renaissance. It was like every time I was listening to a song, it had five different parts in it. And I talked to Tracy. And Tracy had me look at it through a completely different lens. And so I press play again. Guys, I love it. I am so into Cowboy Carter. I looked at it. I didn't take it just for what it was. I read an article about it. I listened to what she was doing with the music. And rather than looking at it from a commercial viewpoint, I started looking at like the artistry of it and what she was doing with the sounds, what she was doing with the different genres. I really like this album.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's really good on so many different levels. I have a lot of favorites on this. Your thoughts?
So I like this album so much that it makes me recontextualize Beyonce.
Okay.
So I'll be honest with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if we look at Beyonce's career, Dangerously in Love, B-Day, I Am Sasha Fierce. All right, now all of these albums are good for me. People like I Am Sasha Fierce. I like Sweet Dreams. I like Single Ladies. A lot of records on here that are good. Four was not my favorite.
You know, I liked Four.
People liked it, right? I think right now Beyonce is on as impressive a four album run as anyone in music has ever had. When you look at Beyonce in 2013, self-titled surprise drop album, Lemonade, Renaissance, Cowboy Carter. We'll leave the Carters out. But when you look at all of these solo albums, from Beyonce to Lemonade to Renaissance to Cowboy Carter, I think it's as impressive a four-album run as I've ever seen from anyone. And I'll tell you why. Two reasons. Number one, the musical evolution that happens throughout these four albums. Beyonce goes from being an artist that teeters on this very distinct pop sensibility to evolving into an incredibly introspective, personal, genre-bending master of cultural sensibility that you don't typically see with somebody that's in the middle of their career, to me. Beyonce, the album, she kind of grew up in a way. It was a more overtly sexual side of her, maybe more of a raw, realer side. Lemonade is like an album that she like copes basically with. Now, there's music right in between these two albums. You think Lemonade 2016 and then Renaissance 2022. There's music in between there. Obviously, she gives us some music with Jay-Z. She gives us some soundtrack stuff. She's doing some other stuff, of course. So it's not quite the break that it seems. But by the time she's come back, her sound has evolved. It's different. It's cutting edge. It's pushing boundaries. It's an evolution that we don't typically see. And then with Cowboy Carter, she's able to take something old and make it new. Beyonce has become a master of expressing herself musically. I'm not talking about the total package, because a lot of times when we talk about people who are singers and dancers and entertainers, we talk about the total package from them. We talk about, okay, they are great musicians, but they're also fantastic entertainers. So the total package means that they don't have to quite be the musicians that some of their contemporaries are. I think as dope as Beyonce is on stage, the music mm-hmm. that she's putting out right now is as good as anything that I've heard. Like, she's putting out like ridiculously serious, timely, meaningful music. Like meaningful music. And it's really impressive to see how she's found herself as her career is going on. Like Cowboy Carter knocked my goddamn socks off. Knocked my socks off is what it did, that goddamn Cowboy Carter. Bodyguard is one of the best songs I've ever heard. I love it.
One of the best songs you've ever heard?
I love the song. It was love at first sight. Let me tell you how good the Bodyguard song is to me. I have ADD. So if I like a song too much, it'll stop me from listening to the rest of the album.
Interesting.
So I'll tell you this, how to make an album for somebody with ADD. I'll tell you right now. If you put a banger as track fucking 4 on your shit, it takes me, after that, it'll take me a week and a half to work through the rest of your album. Unless I force myself. Because if you give me a banger on track 4, I'll start listening to that bitch over and over and over again. Then I'll get scared, because I'll be scared that I won't like the rest of the album as much. So I'll just stop. Do you know how many albums with songs that I really loved that I haven't heard the full thing because I don't want to listen to the rest of it for fear that the rest of it won't be able to meet the favorite record that I have?
Is there a particular reason why it's track 4?
I'm just saying, it's not track 4 all the time.
Okay.
If you can understand what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that sometimes it happens early. God damn it, Zombie Woman. Are you going to be able to make it through the podcast?
I'm fine. I only need an hour and a half.
I got you, Rach. I really am concerned, though.
You probably should be.
Yeah.
You probably should.
So I'm just saying, look, to me, no notes. I thought the album itself was very important, the way that it was looking at the history of Black people in country music. I think the breaks that she gave to Black people in country music, Tanner Adele, someone who I've come to love, I only learned about her after people talked about Beyonce and how she was going to take up space in country. I feel like she's launching a Black country movement that was already there, but people weren't paying attention to.
Well, yes, I definitely think that some of that is true. Like, you mentioned some of the artists and she put us on. Is it Shaboozy? Is that how you say his name? He's fantastic. He's on like 4 or 5 songs.
You like him.
Anyways, I do. But it's not a country album. And I think it's important is to show our roots across multiple genres and the way that she layers those different genres with this album. I mean, we talked about her statement that she put out right before she was about to release Cowboy Carter. And it was that reminding people, don't listen to this, which is a little tricky because we got Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages. So you thought, oh, that's what the rest of the album is going to be about. But it's not. It's much bigger than that. And it's almost as if Beyoncé created her own genre by layering all these different genres together to show that music is so much more than limiting an artist just to one particular thing. I think that's kind of the rundown that I was getting. And when I looked at it in that way, I was like, this is a really beautiful piece of work. I'm looking at it beyond each single. I'm looking at it as a whole. And it really is beautiful. It is.
She's also did a good job with this and the last album with selecting the shittiest singles on the album to release as singles. Driving our expectation of the project way down. And then the moment that the shit pops on, because what was the one she came out with before?
It was, oh my gosh, if you had not said that, You Can't Break My Soul.
Okay. Decent song, but that was not the type of song that you would have heard and then been like, oh my God, this is about to be some fucking fire. And when 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em dropped, people were like,
yeah,
all right. You know what I mean? And then everybody was thinking, hey, this shit might suck. And it's her best work to me.
I mean, when you hear the first song, American Requiem, mm-hmm. she's establishing what the rest of the album is going to be. And you can hear the layering of the genres in that first album. I loved it. I loved it, loved it. And immediately I was like, not immediately, but I was like, okay, like this is a different sound than I thought I was going to get. I can't like speak highly about it enough. So are you going to the Cowboy Carter tour?
No, I don't do that type of shit.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, I don't. We're not going.
I mean, unless I'm gifted tickets.
No, it doesn't matter. I'm not going. It's too many people. I don't go to big concerts like that. I don't like concerts. We've talked about
this before. Oh, I love concerts.
I don't like concerts. I don't understand even the purpose of a concert. I don't understand the purpose of live music.
Van, now come on.
I'm being for real.
What do you mean you don't understand the purpose of a concert?
What the purpose of a concert, like what's, why? Why would you go?
Because you can appreciate and absorb the music in a completely different way. See, to me, when I see somebody live, I actually like them so much more. Because I can appreciate them as an artist. It's not something that was produced and packaged and edited together on an album. It's raw, it's real, it's interactive. That is why I like a concert.
So this is my thing. I like to go to live sporting events sometimes. But the live sporting event is the same product that you're getting when you watch it on TV, just closer up. You see things better. A concert is an inferior product.
Whoa.
Musically. It is.
No. Van, what's the best concert you've ever been to?
I can't remember one that I was like, if you've ever seen Prince in concert,
you would never say that. It is not an inferior. If you've ever seen Prince, because he gives you so much more.
I'd rather listen to Prince.
It's because you haven't been. I have had the pleasure of seeing him, and it's next level. Prince, I would say he's the best concert I've ever been to in my life.
There you go. I think sometimes watching somebody perform, if it's intimate and it's like an acoustic guitar, cool, but it's loud in there, it's people going crazy. I can't hear. You know what I mean? It's like being at a club, but you can't dance with nobody and you got to walk far for the drinks. You know, it's kind of odd, right? I don't like that type of shit. Yeah. I don't like that type
That's
of
fine.
Shit. It's a lot of people. People are jumping around. People are yelling at the best parts of the song that you want to hear. Like, I guess the Watch the Throne tour was pretty fun because they did They did niggers in Paris like 15 times, and it got to be like super funny after they did it like the sixth time or something. I guess that was kind of cool. But then you got to drive back to the crib, and it's like, what time are we going to leave? And like,
I did not realize you complained so much.
I don't like this type. Even I don't like when I go to a live sporting event. I want it to be a blowout. I want the Lakers to be
so you
up
can leave
15
early,
so I can leave. If I have to stay to the last possession, I'm fucking pissed. Because now it's a hassle. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, there's certain experiences that
go to sleep.
There are other unpleasant parts, but it's worth it to have the moment, right? I could say that about a sporting event, going to a playoff game, definitely going to a concert. You just know you're going to have to fight through crowds. You know you're going to sit in traffic for parking. I would even say that for traveling overseas. You know it's a hassle for the airport. You wait for the luggage. You have to have a connecting flight. But when you get there, it's all worth it.
But see, that's
sometimes you just
got to
wait.
Yeah. Anyway, we can move on because people are just going to be like, oh, Van doesn't know what's good. He doesn't know how to fucking go.
You
to
just
a
haven't been to any really
fucking
great concerts is what it sounds like. But it's okay.
I don't understand the point. So okay. I'm here at the hotel. When I go down there to the pool, do you know what makes me not stay at the pool?
People.
They got music playing. I don't want to hear no music. Oh, dun, 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 dun. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear live music. I want to hear music when I want to hear it.
Okay, so you're literally going to WrestleMania this week. Is that the attitude you're taking into WrestleMania?
Whoa! No, I'm not. I'm going to enjoy myself at WrestleMania. But WrestleMania is going to be a lot. I'm just letting you know. It's going to be a lot of bullshit. All right, let's move on. Did you watch the Gerard Carmichael show?
Yeah, I watched the first episode.
What a uniquely fascinating show. Not for you. Talk
didn't
to me.
Pop. The first episode didn't pop like I wanted it to. I don't know what I was expecting. It just, I'm going to continue watching it because I want to support him and I like him. I don't know what I was expecting. I just was a little bored. I mean, there was obviously a moment that really got my attention, which we're going to talk about. But other than that, it just kind of felt, the word that keeps coming to my mind is chaotic, but it wasn't chaotic. It wasn't that extreme. It just was disjointed.
Interesting.
I don't know why. That's how I felt watching the first episode. And it's reality TV, but it's also like a documentary style. So I don't know. I got to watch the second episode.
I feel you. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was revelatory almost. Like it was, I don't know, so brutally honest that it was jarring in some ways. It was kind of like, you know, Gerard Carmichael, a little whore, a little slut muffin, you know, little slut boy out there getting it. And he was just unafraid.
That didn't shock me.
Yeah. He was very unafraid to be a version of him that we just have not seen yet. And I thought that was very fascinating. Of course, the part of it that's going viral, powerful as well. Powerful as well, the conversations that he would have with his friends around his mom. I just think that what he's doing, I think it actually really matters for a lot of people that are following in his journey to his ultimate self-discovery and self-determination. I thought the part with Tyler was excruciating, which is what we're going to talk about right now and do a little post-mortem on the conversation we had on the last podcast. But if you guys did not see the first episode, there was a part where Gerard Carmichael and Tyler, the Creator, two guys that have been friends for a very long time, I think 5-6 years, maybe longer, Gerard had fallen in love with Tyler, the Creator, And he had told him back in the day that he loved him. And Tyler, Creator, responded, "Stupid bitch." And I guess he wanted to talk to him about how that unrequited love, or not even the unrequited love, but Tyler's failure to meet the moment in a way that was nourishing to Gerard, how that made him feel. And Tyler basically just kind of doubled down on it. It wasn't a serious moment for him. He was as Tyler the Creator in the moment as you would have thought that he would have been. Did you see it?
I did see it. I'm not going to defend Tyler the Creator at all.
He's there to defend.
I'm not. I'm about to say something.
He didn't do anything wrong.
I don't think so either. But there were a lot of people that I saw who were really bothered by his response. And so I see it in two different ways, right? I see that they have a friendship. They were real friends. So Tyler the Creator should have given him a better response out of respect for their friendship, just as a friend, right? I understand you might be uncomfortable and maybe your initial response might be wild, but you work through that and you kind of explain where you're coming from, because your friend just opened himself up in a way that is scary for any individual. And then you respond in that way. On the other hand, this is more in response to it playing out on camera. I don't know how I would feel about having this conversation on camera and filmed. I don't know how, if I'm Tyler, you're bucking your eyes at me. If I'm Tyler,
very
having this
conversation coming from you.
I think this is a very, granted, it's a documentary about Gerard's life. But if I'm your friend, I don't know that this is the conversation. If you know that Tyler responded a certain way and not saying that that was okay, but then have that conversation on camera publicly, you could tell that your friend was uncomfortable having the conversation. I just don't know if I agreed with doing this on camera in this way.
You think he set him up to look bad?
I don't think he set him up to look bad, but I thought it was a little unfair. Unless he said, "Hey, Tyler, we're going to talk about that conversation that we had via text that was private. I'm going to talk about it on camera." If he prefaced it before, okay, then Tyler knew what he was walking into. But to have that conversation and expect Tyler to respond in a different way with cameras, I thought Gerard was setting himself up for failure.
My
I don't know why he would have expected more from him in that moment.
My understanding was that he told him that he was going to interview him for his new show, but did not necessarily tell him what they would be discussing.
I don't think that's right. And if Tyler responded that way in private, why would he be different in public? I'm not saying it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's okay, but Gerard, to me, set himself up for failure for a very similar response that he got the first time.
Well, he said, "I don't really look at you like that. That's like, bro, that's like a brother." So that's the response. There can be no other response if that's the way that you feel. I think if you were looking for him to be a little bit more cognizant of how hard it was for you to say that, I can understand that. But, you know, some people are who they are. Also, you have to remember that some people's defense mechanism for feeling intensely deep feelings is to play them off, is to act like they're not happening, is to fart in a room with the cameraman and then leave the cameraman in there. It's to start performing. It's to take a step back away from the reality and then start performing, which is exactly what Tyler the Creator did. He started performing like right away. He went into performance mode because he was uncomfortable with the feelings that his friend was feeling right there, that his responsibility. And that's how some people deal with stuff. That, you know, people are different. Everybody has people looking at him like he's fucking Gargamel or whatever. It's not, you know, it's not what it was. it's an odd situation to be put into, especially when something like that is unrequited. Like, what do you really want? You know, but I thought the show was interesting.
I think it's going to get interesting for me. I just wasn't as a huge fan of the first episode, but this was interesting to me. I would be mad at my friend if my friend did that to me on camera, unannounced.
Oh, for real? You would? You'd be pissed off?
Yeah. Well, I just...
Especially if it was a lady. Let's think about one of your friends that we could turn gay for you. Let's see.
Well, no, that's... I don't want to like make light of the conversation. I don't want to make light of the conversation because it was real. They were real feelings for Gerard. Gerard wanted more out of that situation. Gerard wanted more out of that situation.
Katie.
Okay, Katie.
Katie comes to you and she goes, Rachel, I love you.
On camera.
Katie. On camera. Part of the playbook. We're doing an episode of Higher Learning Presents the Playbook. And then Katie's there, the thing. She goes, really, Rachel, I want to take a page out of the playbook. You'll be mad.
I would be mad that she said that to me like that in public. Like, just have, if you really want it to be meaningful, do it in private.
Well, he did do it in private. And then they had to have the conversation.
And then he responded that way. So doing it again and expecting a different response, and now it's public. To me, you set yourself up.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Speaking of this, we had a conversation on Higher Learning with Justin Sylvester that the trailer for the Gerard Carmichael show actually spurred. Like it sparked the conversation. The conversation was around interracial relationships in prominent Black gay men. I posted a clip of what Justin had to say, just part of what Justin had to say on Twitter. And as we sit here today, we're almost to 1 million impressions and different topics, responses, should I say, surrounding this clip. And
did you say 100 million?
No, I said 1 million. Not 100
million. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Would be go different. Ahead. If it was 100 million, we would do a whole separate podcast just about that every single week we were talking about. So yes. And there was a controversy. There were a lot of Black gay men who were nonplussed by a specific answer to a question that Justin had given us when he was talking about some of the reasons why he decide to start dating white guys, or why other people date white guys when they leave their hometowns, or when he got to West Hollywood, he personalized it. And there was a lot of discussion over it. And some people were pretty harsh on Justin.
Yeah.
I would encourage anyone that's listening to this now because of the clip to please, please, and I blame myself for not posting a link to it. I've been traveling. But please, please listen to the entirety of the conversation that we had with Justin, which I thought was fantastic and vulnerable. And I learned a lot from it. Rachel, you wanted to say something specifically.
Well, yes. You know, if you listen to the entire interview when we're talking about it, we say we've talked a lot about things that impact the queer community, but we really haven't, for the most part, have had representation on the podcast to speak to it. Any sensitive topic is hard for somebody to come on and talk about it, specifically when it is personal to them. And it really was upsetting to me. Yes, probably because he's my friend, but also just for somebody to come on and completely be open and honest from their perspective. Repeatedly through that interview, Justin says, I am only speaking about me. I'm telling my story. I'm not speaking on behalf. I'm not a representative of every Black gay man. I'm speaking to my own experience and what I've been through and why I have made certain decisions. And I thought that was very brave and courageous. And you got a lot from the conversation I did. And I do want to say that I heard from a lot of thought warriors who actually thought it was an amazing interview and it really opened their eyes to things. But the other, you know, when you put stuff out there, there's always going to be another side of it. And just, I guess, the response of people being so negative, so quick to attack is really disappointing. When we were really trying to have a better understanding of something that we're seeing, are we interpreting this right? And really trying to have a conversation that I feel like you don't really see in the Black community. And the response that we're getting kind of highlights why we don't really, why people aren't having these conversations or why they might be afraid to get on the mic and do it. And I just think that if you're going to take the opportunity to write an entire paragraph on social media, then you need to take the moment to listen to the entire interview before you conclude whatever you feel about what Justin or somebody in general has to say.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say is, for people that were wondering why we were even curious about this in the first place, I can answer that question for myself. Is I am curious about people who I share my community with. I am not a part of the Black gay community, but I'm a part of the Black community, and Black gay men and women are my brothers and sisters. So anything that might affect their lives when it comes down to racial politics is my concern. It's my concern about the way anti-Blackness, or about the way any identity politics would show up in any group of Black people anywhere, right? So asking these questions that have to do with these issues that are really deep and really hard to litigate without talking to people, it's difficult, and it's something that we shouldn't be doing on our own. But yeah, I care about the lives of Black gay men. I care about whether or not they have love. I care about whether or not they're finding love. I care about how easily that love is accessible to them. I care about how they're being represented inside of our community, outside of their our community. I care about their lives. I care about them. So when I saw that, I was just like, huh, that's an interesting thing. There's nothing about, I don't look at our communities as not being the same. Which is another reason why I'll kick somebody in the ass behind y'all, because we are the same. I'm not going to speak for you, but having a platform allows me the opportunity to let brothers and sisters speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect at that. We're definitely not.
Right.
You know what I mean? Certainly not. But we try. Maybe we'll have that conversation again. And maybe we'll have that conversation with somebody else in a different way. It won't be to minimize or have a rebuttal to anything that Justin said, because I believe Justin Sylvester to be an awesome person, a very brave person to share his story with us, and just a dope motherfucker overall. So I'm very grateful and pleased that he came on the conversation and had to, and was so open and honest. But if there are things that are deeper that we need to discuss, I had conversations with with some people that I knew over the clip for hours on Saturday night. Hours. Some of my Black gay friends on Saturday night. And they were talking about so many things that the conversation started about that, but then it moved on to a way I see myself. It moved on to the way, like, we interpret love as Black gay men and Black hetero men, and about how all of these relationships and emotional responsibilities end up presenting themselves later in life. It was very nourishing and very great. Very great. Shout out to my man, DeRay. Very nourishing, very great. Very great conversation. Brought me closer to him. So, to me, we can't talk about this stuff enough. And I'm sorry that people didn't, some people didn't, in my opinion, approach Justin with enough care. That's all I would say.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a little break. Donald Trump doesn't give a fuck. I don't think that there's any person in America right now that's less accountable for anything than Donald Trump. Donald Trump operates with zero accountability.
Sure.
Two different posts. He launched an attack on the judge's daughter. The judge overseeing his New York hush money trial. He shared a news story with photos of this lady on his Truth social network. I'm not going to name her because that to me adds to the whole thing. But, you know, Donald Trump reposted a story that's talking about the daughter of the judge, which some people would say compromises the safety of this woman. I personally believe that Donald Trump knows what he is doing and is using these intimidation tactics to make people back off of him. Rachel, do you agree?
Yeah. You said using the intimidation tactics to what?
To make people back off of him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I am a judge's daughter. And one of the things that I used to really be afraid of, there were times when we were growing up where my dad might have a particular case, and whatever was happening on with that case, it was so intense that the U.S. Marshals would have to sit in front of our house and guard it. They would have to, there were some times where there were cameras that had to be set up in the backyard, in the front yard. I remember one time I was going to college and we had to be escorted to Austin because of whatever it was. And I think my dad tried to protect me from that as much as he could, but sometimes you couldn't. When you see U.S. Marshals parked in front of your house, that's terrifying because you don't know what the threat is. You don't know how serious the person is. You just know it's real. This is triggering to me when I see Donald Trump doing this, and it's on a much grander scale because, one, it's Donald Trump. One, he has so many wild, cultish people that follow him, and we've seen them act on his command before. And they haven't slowed down. And who even knows what they're planning in private? So the fact that he is using his platform to once again highlight someone, basically threaten them and put their life or other people's lives in danger is so troubling and just adds to a list of troubling things that he's doing, all in the name of getting people to back off from, you know, moving forward on a trial with him, all to incite his very dangerous base. And yeah, it's just, it's troubling.
So, you know, looking at this, and then also Donald Trump shared a post that showed one of these Trump mobiles going down the street with
Right.
With all the flags on it, which is fine. You want to put Trump flags in your car, put Trump flags in your car. It's fine. And then on the back of the car, there was a hog-tied Joe Biden on there.
Right.
I'm wondering here. I mean, obviously, moving off this, forget about any moral judgments that I would make. This is what I would say. There seems to be this increasing need for people who support Trump to say, hey, we're not crazy, violent. Insurrectionists. We're not lunatics. We're not any of that. We're just people that look at America in a different way. Well, I mean, you're lying.
Yeah, you are.
It's just not true.
Yeah.
If you're a Trump supporter right now, you don't mind political violence. You don't mind white nationalism. You don't mind intimidation of judges' family. You don't mind threats. You don't mind coercion. You don't mind anti-democratic. You don't mind any of that. You don't. Now, maybe if you're a goddamn huge Democrat, you're as left as you can be, maybe you're at the core of it, all of those same things are happening with the people that you've empowered, right? Politics is a dirty game.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, if you knew, how much would you care?
Right.
I guess that's the question with all of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
I can't be mad at you for being ignorant. But if you know something, how much do you care? And Donald Trump wants a very specific America. He wants an America molded in his image. He wants an America not molded by his policy. That's not what he wants. He wants an America molded in his image. Maybe it's always been that way.
Yeah.
But he doesn't mind the hog tying of political opponents. He doesn't mind people assaulting the Capitol. He doesn't mind putting the picture of the judge's daughter up there so that people intimidate her. He's never had any rules. He's never had to follow any rules. Decorum has never been an essential part of his life. In a lot of ways, Donald Trump has never had to be an American citizen. He's never had to be someone that lived by any societal code of conduct. So his unruliness is a function of his power and access. And it knows no bounds, knows no end. So as much as I would love to both ways and have a political conversation with people who I disagree with, I think that a lot of you are liars and fuck-offs. And I'm sick of listening to your horseshit bullshit. You don't like the guy because of any policies. You don't like the guy because of any different type of situation that you feel like you are in. You like the guy because he doesn't accept no for an answer. He destroys whatever is in front of him, and he doesn't matter what bodies he leaves along the way. And you wish you were that. That's your idea of the American dream. The idea of American power for you is you wish you could dominate whoever you wanted to and grab any pussy that you wanted to. You wish you could do that. You don't want America to be the way things were under Trump. You want to be Trump because you've been sold this fever dream, this American pornographic creation of what it means to be powerful in this country. And it doesn't have anything to do with solidarity or sacrifice or sharing. It has to do with domination and who you can fuck.
Oh.
And I'm just sick of the pretending. This motherfucker's out of control. You guys want to be him. You want to be near him. You want nobody to be able to tell you no. So that's what you do. That's who you follow. The guy that represents this. You niggas can't tell me about what was going on. Y'all don't know what this motherfucker did. You talking? Anyway. So I'm just, every time something like this happens, because look, I fall into the trap too. I fall into the trap of, look, you guys, we have to make a country where everybody talks and we listen to everyone and we all get together and blah, 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 blah. But that assumes that you're negotiating with human beings. My mom told me this. This is what my mom told me. It's the last thing I'll say about this. This is what my mom told me a long time ago. What's the most important thing in a human relationship with anyone? Empathy. I was just talking to a new friend of mine. I was telling her this. Empathy, right? My mother says, once you realize that someone doesn't have the capacity for empathy, move on.
That would make them a sociopath, right?
Once you realize that this person can't do it, done. Not that it's suppressed, not that it's not going to come out. Once you realize they don't have that capacity, done. Mm. She was telling me one day she had to do some work to be able to understand that my father could be empathetic because he presented so strong. But then she'd see it and she'd be like, oh, there it is right there. But once you get to a point that you realize that somebody doesn't have the capacity for empathy, you're out.
Yeah.
I think we've been there with Trump, but people want to be that.
It's the way you say it is so right and it's so clear. But the people who still want to support him, it's like they feel like they can compartmentalize Trump, which to me doesn't make sense, right? They say, well, I can ignore this, or we don't really take him that seriously. We're voting for him because of this, or we're anti-Joe Biden, or anti-Joe Biden's policies, or certain people in his administration. And they try to separate themselves from the extremists. And the way you lay it out, and it's so true, you can't at this point. You can't separate, you know, the people who are driving down the street in Long Island with a hog-tied Joe Biden to the back of the truck. You can't separate yourself from them because all of y'all are coming together to elect a president who's pretty much telling you exactly what he's going to do once he's in office. And as I love the way you said it, in the name of him, every decision he will make will be in the name of Trump. And I don't know what is going to be a wake up. If January 6th was not a wake up call, if denying the election is not a wake up call, if the fact that these rules, no rule or law applies to Trump, according to him, this is a man who does not believe that he can be stopped or controlled. If none of that is a wake up call to you, it's almost like, why do we have to keep talking about it, but nothing will be. Because these people, and it's almost as twisted as the extremists, right? At least the extremists are just outright saying exactly what it is that they're going to do when they support and they admit it. I don't know if it's worse to be twisted to where you think that you are different or you are separate from the others. I think it's worse. The denial.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Real quick, go watch it. From Van Lathan, go watch Eric Adams on The Breakfast Club. I know how you know, go watch it because he didn't realize who was going to be waiting there for him.
Well, it wasn't Jess.
It was Ole who was there. You keep fucking with Jess, you're going to get what you're looking for.
What did I say that was not factual?
Okay, Rachel.
I couldn't have been sitting in that chair we've had her on the podcast before. She talks. If you follow her on social media, she continuously talks about what the mayor is doing in New York City. She was the perfect person to sit there on The Breakfast Club. And as much as The Breakfast Club may say, like, all these people are talking about, you know, like, they're defending what they did with Candace Owens, blah, 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 all that. Obviously, they heard something to bring her in to have that conversation because she is very effective in a lot of ways, but specifically when it comes to talking about the things that Mayor Adams is doing in New York City.
And let me say something here. And let me say something about that. Look, I'm not about to go to bat for anybody, but I'm saying all you can really hope when people get it wrong is that they listen to the criticism and that they don't get it wrong a second time. Now, you have to demand a certain amount of accountability, but I think a lot of New Yorkers would have felt a way if Mayor Adams was allowed to come there. And I'm not as intimately educated on how New Yorkers feel about Eric Adams. I know how Ole feels about him, right? And they had a great conversation. Go to her YouTube as well. Illuminati. Go to her YouTube page because they had a fantastic talk. It was her. It was Antoinette. It was Mark Lamont Hill. It was Christina B. Remember, you know who's taken off? You know who's taken off in the content world, in the world of being a voice and being seen?
Who?
Shout out to this lady. Remember the substitute teacher that we had a conversation about, that heavy dick?
With the pictures? Remember she? Oh, no, it was a tweet.
She wanted some heavy dick on the weekend, and we had a conversation about her.
Mm-hmm.
It was good she was suspended. No, it wasn't good. It sucks. She's blown the fuck up. Very talented, very smart. Let me shout her out. Very talented.
Look
very
what it did.
Smart. I saw her on Horrible Decisions. She's now. I've seen her. Somebody. It's so stupid for a school board or any place with someone that has that much to offer to have treated her that way. And that was my point then. I feel vindicated in my conversation now with talking about that. Like, I feel vindicated with that. Would you like to maybe revisit that? And
nobody questioned her intelligence. And I think
Miss
it
X
helped.
Tina
Look,
B,
it
Christina
gave her
Brown.
A platform.
She up to 100K on the gram. Miss X Tina B. Follow her. She's doing comedy. She's doing introspective stuff. Good for her. She's fucking coming all the way up. I saw her with Ole on her, and they were all talking about the whole Amanda Seals thing and people's opinions on that. So it was great. Mm-hmm. So it was great. It's good. But you actually, to be honest with you, all just aside, you probably are right. It's probably better off that she dropped the heavy dick tweet, and then she wasn't teaching anymore. She was free to go do the stuff that she was doing, because it's a much better path. You know what I mean? The heavy dick tweet is something else. Heavy dick.
It's funny.
It's funny to think of is heavy dick. Like, you put the dick on the scale and then it registers. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't it weigh you down?
Lift
Rachel
you up.
Says no. Rachel lifts you up. Wow. Hey, another requisite for the playbook. What Rachel just said. Oh, no. Stop. Rachel, would you stop denying who you are? Rachel just said another requisite for the playbook is heavy dick. No, Rachel said, all the guys out there with that 5-pound cock, let her know. Yo, straight up right now, this is what y'all do. Don't even play around. Just hit Rachel's DM with the pictures. Hit Rachel's DM with the pictures. Hit him with the pictures. You know what I mean? Like, hit her with the pictures. No, don't do that. Don't do that. That's sexual intimidation, harassment, all kinds of, don't do that. It's a joke.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Celebrating Diversity Month with Insightful Higher Learning Podcast, with somebody just BIPOC entrepreneurs just gave us a shout out.
That's great.
Do you consider yourself to be BIPOC?
I mean, aren't we all? I don't really use that term, but
I'm black.
Well, that's what the B stands for.
But do we want to be?
I don't use that
first
term.
First of all, shout out to BIPOC. What does BIPOC stand for again? What does it stand
black,
for again?
Black and Indigenous people of color. Is that right?
Black and Indigenous people of color. I guess that's cool.
Is that right?
What's with me? Why
you don't like labels?
It's not that I don't like labels. It's like my label is black. So I'm cool with having a party where we all get together and we plan, plot, and strategize. It is, but I don't want it to be formal. Because this goes back to my whole thing about allyship. I don't have any problem with the term BIPOC. I think it's a great term. You know what I mean? But I don't like umbrella terms for the black experience. I don't.
BIPOC is not just about the black experience. It's inclusive of all minorities.
But I don't want to be inclusive of all minorities.
Oh.
I don't. I want to empower all minorities, but I need to keep my eyes on the prize. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be inclusive of all minorities because, like, I want all minorities, particularly the indigenous people of this world, who, once I start thinking about what the indigenous people, particularly of the United States, went through, it fills me up with this just unshakable rage. When you think about the fact that it's 20, 25 million people living above the Rio Grande at a certain point, and now it's like a couple of 100,000 people. Like, when you think about that, it just fills me up with rage, like with whatever. But I almost get so specific with the black experience. Sometimes it's like black people, a black diaspora. Okay, it's a big diaspora. And I'm like, cool. And then it becomes black Americans. And then it becomes black people from the South. And then it becomes black people from Louisiana. A difference between black people in New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And then it just gets all the way down. It just gets boiled down to just my understanding of just black people in South Baton Rouge. I don't know. I'm very gatekeepy with my freedom.
Yeah, I mean, you left me out. I eventually got left out.
Yeah, but I can't. That's not right. So maybe it's definitely not. I'm calling myself down to the congregation. It's not right, but just everybody has different needs, and sometimes we get all thrown together, and it gets diluted.
I don't have a problem with it if you're talking about it in a specific way, right? But if it's something that's particular to, it's a black issue, then no, you don't use BIPOC, and I don't think people would. But if you're talking in general and you're talking about minorities or you're talking about people of color, or you want to be inclusive of not white, then I don't have a problem with it.
Do you know when I first learned about the term of color?
What? When?
Playboy's Women of Color.
This sounds on point.
There was a specific magazine. I don't know if Playboy ever had like Playboy's Black Bunnies or Black Girls or Playboy. Because they always, when it was in that world, they would always go too far. It would always be something that was a little bit offensive. Playboys, Nubian Nights. Playboy, African Allure. You know what I mean? And they just put a bunch of black women together and they would probably like go to Nairobi to shoot it or something like that. You know what I mean? It's like they would do that. But I remember it was Playboy Women of Color. And then when they had women of color, there was all different. It wasn't just black women. It was Latinas. There was some Asian ladies in there. And I was like, oh, of color means all of us together.
Wow. And
then what always happens to me, as soon as I think we're all together, somebody says, nah, nigga, not you. This is what happens. So I'm going to explain just real quick before we move on, because I got something else to run by you. I'm going to explain my diaspora trauma. The trauma of the diaspora.
Okay, go ahead.
And everybody around has felt this same trauma. So I'm not saying that is unique to black Americans. Every time I start feeling that we're all together, somebody would say, nah, not you. And it wouldn't be, nah, not, they would be. It's like, when I first learned the Akata word.
I don't know why that's funny to me. I don't know why.
It'd be like, nah, nigga, not you.
Nah.
Oh, shit.
Not you.
Not you. Like, it'd be like, oh, shit, we're all together. it's one big diaspora. We do the same dances. We drink the same drinks. And he'll be like, nah, this drink is for my culture. And I'll be like, what? You just ate some of my gumbo. Like, you just, like,
we've
you
all
just,
had these moments.
Like, we was just on the same Kool-Aid. Like, nah, this drink come from Ghana. You can't touch this drink. Or when you drink it, big up us because it's our drink. But everything you do is for all of us. And then we have this stuff that we do and it's just for us. And I'd be like, God damn. Like, when I first learned about the Akata thing, I was looking at this Nigerian girl that I was trying to talk to, and her brothers was like, and I've told this story. Her brothers were like telling me her parents would never go for it. Yeah. And they were like, no, her brothers, who I was cool with, I played basketball with. Her brother's like, nah, you're Akata. Our parents wouldn't want her to be with you. You're Akata. And I'm like, how the fuck y'all got a word? Like, why would y'all have a nigger word? And then you know what they told me?
Right.
They was like, y'all got a word too. Y'all call us African booty scratches. Y'all do all kinds of things. Everybody got it. Don't think it's only going one way. Everybody got it. And I had to be like, that's true. But the scars are still there. It's facts. Because we're going to all be dancing to Jay-Z or to Wayne or something. We're all going to be dancing. Everybody going to be dancing together. We're all going to be doing the thing. And then some other type of music is going to come on. I'm going to start doing their dances. And they're going to be like, appropriation. And I'm going to be like, yeah, you know what, man? Fuck it.
I think we all have a nah, not you moment.
What was yours? Did you have one? Nah, black American, not you. Did you have one?
I'm sure. I can't think of it at the moment, but there was a time where I knew I was not included.
Emmanuel,
I told you that I didn't realize until I went to college that we weren't all on one accord. You know, we had like Black Student Alliance, and then there was like African Student Association. And I was like, oh, like, yeah. And it was like, no, not you.
Not you.
And I was kind of like, are we all together? I didn't realize that they looked at us in a different way. I did not know that until college. Not everybody.
The reason why I overreacted with the Acho thing, which I did. Okay. Overreacted. The reason why I overreacted with the Acho thing is because that was a nah, not you. It's like, I can talk to these people because I don't have this type of trauma. And I'm like, listen at this motherfucker right here. And rather than just confront.
It's true. It is a nah, not you moment.
Like, rather than just confront what was being said, I launched into emotion. I'm not saying I said anything wrong, but I shouldn't have disrespected that man like that.
But he did say, nah, not you.
That's what I'm saying. So that's like, I got to get my trauma. You know what I've been doing? Speaking of this segue. So I'm reading Coleman Hughes's book. I want to have Coleman Hughes on the podcast.
The new book?
Why did you make that face? Why did you?
Because that means I'm going to have to read the book too.
I'm through chapter one. Okay. I'm going to do some work.
He's making his rounds with this book. So I should have known this was coming.
To get Coleman to come on the show.
I'm sure he'll come on.
Well, we'll see. He's a busy guy. The book is, Jesus Christ, look at all these goddamn books. No wonder I'm a goddamn, I got to give my mind a break, man. The book is called The End of Race Politics. You know what? For the rest of this week, I'm not going to listen to nothing but Doom. I'm serious. Listen to these books. I'm reading Requiem for the American Dream again, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Except for Palestine, Mark Lamont Hill and Michael Pitnick. Like, I read Joanna's MCU book, you know, just all of this stuff. Adolph Reed, Barbara J. Fields.
You read multiple books at one time?
Yeah, because I'm listening to them.
Oh, you listen to them. I can't. These are
anything that I read. So I am reading the Palestinian refugee problem by Benny Morris. That book was $75 on Amazon. And when the book came, there was a library card insert in the back of it. So this is somebody's fucking book that they got from the library. Never gave that bitch back. It was the last one they had. So I'm reading that. Mark told me to read that. But so I got that with me. So I'll read that whenever I'm locking in, like study, taking notes and all of that stuff. But as far as just reading things, I listen to a lot of them, you know, on the plane, different stuff, all of that. But I'm listening to Coleman Hughes' book right now. I'm into it. I think he has not a unique take. Like, I've heard a lot of this stuff before, but he does have a very thoughtful take on what he begins what he thinks the end of race politics should be. I'm only through the first chapter, so there's a lot more to have. But I think that he's a thoughtful guy. I think he's a sincere guy. And I think that he has a fucking fantastic brain. And I would love to have Coleman Hughes come on Higher Learning. Love it. I thought
I'm not anti what happened, Coleman Hughes coming on at all.
You're not?
No.
This was bait for you. I just knew that you would be against it.
Why? We had Kamel on.
Yeah. Look at your face. You hate a black conservative.
Coleman, no, I don't.
Say that he's not a black conservative, by the way.
No, I don't. I really don't. Because it would be an intelligent conversation, I think. He's I'm not saying we have to agree. Huh?
He's not a conservative.
We don't have to agree, but I've constantly said that I've really liked when we had Kamel on. Like, I've constantly said that. And I didn't agree with anything he said. I'm not against that.
Back to Coleman real quick. Let me ask you this. We move on. Since we're just kind of free-flowing the end of the podcast. He was on The View. He was going back and forth with Sonny about his views on colorblindness as he sees it.
So a lot of people equate colorblindness to I don't see race or to pretending not to see race. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big mistake. We all see race, right? And we're all capable of being racially biased, so we should all be self-aware to that possibility. My argument is not for that. My argument is that we should try our very best to treat people without regard to race, both in our personal lives and our public policy.
Of course.
And the reason I wrote this book, thank you.
Rachel, when you hear someone saying that we should have a colorblind American society, what do you think about that?
That it's race impossible. Blind. I think it's aspirational. You know, like, good for you for wanting this utopia where we don't see each other as different. But it's just unrealistic to me. I'm not knocking somebody who desires to say, I wish we could all just see each other as people and as human beings. But it's just not possible. And we've talked about it multiple times on this podcast. One, if you were just particularly talking about the American society, race is embedded in every single facet of it. It's in, and I don't want to shoot him down for it. I just think it's a waste of time. And I'm not saying that we should, you know, continue to insert race into everything, but I also don't believe in not facing the reality of the situation, which you have to talk about race because it is so like a part of how everything is run. And I'm only speaking to America. And I didn't watch the clip. I didn't watch his back and forth with Sonny. I haven't seen the episode. I know he was on The View. So I don't know particularly what he said. I'm just speaking to what you said about a colorblind society. You'd have to like start over. You'd have to wipe everybody off the face of the earth. And like have people who come in without any sort of bias or knowing how things existed in this world before. And I still even think the way we function as human beings with,
pork sausages.
No. Thank you. It came back to me. Actually, can you cut out that pause?
Now, people. No. You have to leave the pause and I'll tell you why.
I thought about it before you said pork.
Because you guys, you have, please leave that in. Like, Rachel couldn't find what she was saying and I waved pork in front of her nose like smelling salt and it jogged her memory. So please leave that in. like Rachel couldn't find it. I'm like, pork sausages, boom. Mm-hmm.
Wait, my whole internet messed up and I feel like it did on purpose. Anyways, I was saying with the way people think about, I think it's within innately within us that we want survival of the fittest, that we want to be better than the next person. So it will probably happen all over again, even if you did, but it's just impossible.
So
you believe you can have a colorblind society?
I know you
don't believe that.
I don't want it. I think it's a cop-out. I don't want a colorblind society.
But why do you think it's a cop-out? Why do you use that phrase?
Because to get to this point now and say that you want a colorblind society is like saying, okay, all of this stuff has happened. We've set you black in this many ways. We've degraded you. We've dehumanized you. We've minimized you. We've done all of these things. Now, let's just pretend that your color doesn't matter. So it mattered enough for us to take everything that you've ever had, for us to take your children, for us to take your lives, for us to take your sense of self-worth, for us to take your wealth, for us to take your language. It meant so much then that we had to do all of that. Now, let's just pretend like it doesn't matter. No. You can't just pretend like my blackness doesn't exist now. You have to see my blackness. You have to feel it. You have to understand it. You have to do the work to understand why I'm not less than. You have to do the work to understand what happened, what was done, why it was done, how it's affected me, what me being black has meant. If you don't want to do that, you can choose to ignore it, but I'm not playing the game with you. Because in order for me to be able to live in a society where I trust you, mm-hmm. I have to know that this much has been done. Not necessarily by every individual person. I'm not asking everybody to go out there and take African-American studies or do all of this. I'm talking about as a society, as a country. Okay? They have to decriminalize black is what they have to do. You know, they have to de-exploit black. Mm-hmm. There's a trust hole, and it's deserved. When Dr. King said, I have a dream that one day man would be judged by not the color of his skin, but the content of the character. He said, dream. He didn't say, let's start judging men by the color of their skin.
Right.
He said, I have a dream that one day we'll get there. Well, the question is to everyone who says this is how Dr. King wanted it, have we done enough to get there? That's it. Have we done enough? Have we done enough? Has there been enough work done to get there? Any dream, you have a dream to go to the NBA. You can dream all you want, but you got to work on that left hand. You got to run the hills. You got to do all of that. So
it's more than that.
Go for it.
To your point, it's not just have we done enough work. You use the analogy of you want to go to the NBA. Have you done the work? The question is it even possible? You could do all the work you want to work as hard as you want. It still may be possible for you to never achieve it. This might be a dream, and I don't think that can ever be achieved. Well, can't be color. It's not possible.
I don't want to ever take a world without racism off of the table.
It's not racism. It's not seeing color.
I know. I understand that. But what I'm saying is, in order to get past racism, you have to see color. You have to.
Agree.
In order to get past racism, you have to acknowledge that people are different, that cultures are different.
Understand.
What your skin has denoted in America means for a large portion of people, or for the most part, a different set of cultural realities for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to confront that. And you have to confront it, and you have to say, despite these things, and I haven't worked my way through the book yet, so I'll see how Coleman unpacks these things. But you have to say, despite these things, despite the fact that you are Black and I'm white, despite all of that, I recognize your basic humanity and your ability to exist, determine your life for yourself at the same level that I do. And if there are any glitches and holes in your experience and my experience, if I'm not going to work to fill them, at least I'm going to acknowledge them. So stop gaslighting me.
Sure.
And so for me, I think that's important, because I think just dropping it now is not restorative. Just dropping it now isn't restorative.
I agree.
And it posits something to me that I think is comforting for the people that have had a hand up for all of these years, and confusing for those who haven't. But sure. I would be very interested to talk to him about this. I think he's doing the only thing that, and this is just from reading the foreword, and because he told a very personal story in the foreword, from reading the introduction and the first chapter and seeing him and other things that he's done. I've actually followed Coleman Hughes for a long time. Seeing him and other things that he's done, he's doing the only thing that you can ask somebody to do, which is to try to build the version of the world that they think is the best world, that they think is the best. So I think that's true of him. I don't know how I would ever get there without there being some real deep, hard, and uncomfortable conversations with white America. Anyway, or some pain, or some blood, or some fire. Anyway, works for me, really. Okay.
Yeah.
It's time for us to go. I gotta get a lint brush for my hat.
You do. I'm going straight. I had a lunch. I can't make it. I'm going straight to you. I got sick nose. You see?
Oh, you smell it.
No. Remember how you said the nose gets red?
The nose gets red. That's crazy.
I got sick nose.
You got to cut out the pork, man. I'm just being honest with you. So
I actually haven't had a pork chop in like a week.
A week without pork. It's crazy. All right, we got to go.
No, I didn't say it without pork. I said pork chop.
See what I'm saying? You got too much pork in your diet, man. Take Thin Caps off with Do Not Stop Learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. I apologize for the coughing, guys. Sorry. I'm going to take care of myself and get better. Bye.
Bye-bye.